This week on Freight Up, we take a look at the latest movements in the freight market with our Copenhagen resident Ben Klang, and we look at the reasons of the rebound in iron ore prices of last week with Hal Pei from our Shanghai office. Archie Smith will tell us more about the recent fall in Brent crude futures, and a special guest, Hugh Taylor, from our London consultancy. All this and more on Freight Up.
Freight Up!
Hello and welcome back to Freight Up. My name is Jess.
And I'm Davide.
And on this episode, we'll be your hosts as we navigate the seas of freight and commodities. This week, we are joined by our usual guests, Ben, Archie and Hal, as we review our main markets of dry freight, oil and iron ore, as well as a guest appearance by Hugh Taylor, the manager of the consultancy here at FIS.
But before we get the market-specific updates, we should have a look at the latest news and the index movements since our latest episode.
The annual inflation rate in the euro area remained at 2.4% in April 2024, in line with the market expectations, according to the latest preliminary estimates. Additionally, the eurozone GDP expanded by 0.3% in Q1 of this year, recording the fastest rate since the third quarter of 2022. The Fed kept its rates unchanged at 5.25% to 5.5% during its May meeting for the sixth consecutive time. Officials have acknowledged that tight inflationary pressure and buoyant labour market shows how bringing inflation back to 2% is more difficult than expected. Speaking of labour markets, the unemployment rate in the US rose marginally to 3.9% in April from the 3.8% of the previous month, surpassing market expectations. Also, in Japan, the consumer confidence index has gone down to 38.3 in April from 39.5 in March, the highest reading since April 2019, and it was below market expectations of 39.7%.
If you're having your cup of coffee while listening to our podcast, be aware that a report by the International Coffee Organization showed that the wholesale price index for Robusta coffee beans increased by 17% in April from the month before, reaching $1.94 a pound, the highest since 1979. But what has been the broad market movements of the last 2 weeks? Let's take a quick look at this week's numbers. So the iron ore index has clawed back more of the territory it has lost over the past few months. The 62% index has crept up from $133.65 2 weeks ago to $118.75. More on that later from our Shanghai analyst Hao Pei. The dry freight market has been a tale of two halves. On the one side, there's been the smaller ships with the handy 7TC and Supramax indexes, basically non-movers week on week for the last 2 weeks, the former at around $30,000 and the latter at around $16,000. The Panamax 5TC index had a bit more movement, ranging from $15,000 to $17,500, but by far, the big one has been a week-on-week move of 54% in the Cape 5TC index. On the fuel oil front, the high sulfur fuel has popped back above $500 a ton, closing yesterday with single 5 dropping down towards $600, along with falling crude prices, which have come down from $90 a month ago to $82 today.
Let's get a bit more detail on what we have seen in the dry freight market from Ben Klang. Ben, thanks for joining us. Once again, we're talking about some serious moves in the Capes, aren't we?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, one group I don't envy are the Cape FFA traders at the moment. Again, we've seen some good moves in that market with less pronounced move on the other ship sizes. If you look at the Cape market last week, we saw most of the April losses were recuperated over the past week. This was driven particularly by the North Atlantic, with increased cargo inquiries and tight tonnage list, which has driven much stronger fixture levels. This impressive growth in the Capes has driven forward growth in other markets too. While things kick off to a slow start of the week, we got some market support which pushed May and June, trading up to 24 and a quarter and 28 and a quarter on Tuesday, respectively. Despite the labor holiday on Monday and the low volumes, we continue to see positive moves in the markets, especially on Thursday due to lower lesser vessel supply. This helped push May and June up to 26, 750 and 30 and a half by the end of the week, to then see May close last night at 750 and June closing at 32,375. And if you're looking at the Panamax market, rates were a bit of a mixed bag, fluctuating between positive momentum to range-bound trading. Physically speaking, tonnage count rates held steady, and there was limited transatlantic and front-haul fixtures. Though the week started slowly and the labor holiday significantly impacted liquidity, there was still a lot of optimism, with Thursday's rate seeing May and June trading up to 16,450 and 17,000 respectively, to then see May close last night at 17,375 and June close at 17,925 last night. The Supramax had some potential towards the beginning of the week, with a focus on the near-dated contracts following the movements of the larger sizes. This gradually declined as the week continued, and by Thursday, the Supras did not follow the notable upturn of the other FFA market, perhaps due to weak cargo order volumes. However, the day did close supported and slightly higher than the previous one. This sentiment continued throughout the week with comparatively lower interest than the other markets. FFA-wise, May and June contracts ended the week just over the 16,000 mark and Q4 at 14,600.
Thanks for talking us through those rates. What are we looking at this week volume-wise?
Rather active week for the FFAs last week, despite the holidays, with trading volumes of around 51,230 lots posted on the exchanges. On average, Cape and Panamax futures traded around 4,600 lots and 3,430 lots per day last week. Supramaxes had a less active week, with the average of 880 lots traded daily last week. On the option side, the main action was also on the Capes, with 3,320 lots being cleared on the Cape and 5,090 days on the Panamaxes. Open interest decreased as April and Q2 come to expire. On the 6th of May, Cape 5TC was at 163,928, and that's down 17,600 week on week. And on the Panamaxes 4TC, the open interest was at 163,647, and that's down 17,820 week on week. And then finally, the Supermax 10TCs was at 76,106, which is also down 9,480 week on week. In addition, we saw good volume on the voyage routes futures last week, with 4.85 million tons changing hands on C5, 275 kt on the C3, and 765 kt on the C7.
Looks like a good volume week. Thank you, Ben, for that update. And I look forward to hearing where we end up on our next market update from the dry freight market.
Thank you, Jess.
Next, we have Hao Pei, senior analyst from our Shanghai office. So, Hao, great to have you with us. We have seen the iron ore index rebound from around 2.65% during the past report week. What caused this growth?
Well, iron ore generally fell into expectation last week, as we mentioned in the previous podcast that the correction would not be sustainable. By that time, the uptake of iron ore was rather humble compared with copper, oil, silver, and other equities global-wise, and breaks in late April. The market started to trade a risk-off mode against expecting temporary ceasefire in Mideast or Red Sea area. As well, the U.S. Federal Conference revealed dovish signals during past week. And what's more, China Politburo set tones to support infrastructure and housing market before the holiday. But these are all good news. So after a combination of good news and compared with other high liquid assets, the growth on iron ore might explain the market was not super positive on the product. I mean, just compared to all the rest of the asset classes, just following the growth. After headlines pop out and by just by market, I think the comes out a period of taking gains, though, which is the downside risk.
All right, so similar question to last podcast, but do you think the growth this time will be sustainable?
As I mentioned, downside risk, so I don't think the growth will be sustainable. If we go back to the fundamental side, which is the margin reached -91 per ton, which is the low of the year and also a seasonal low, which would give further limit on the production size of steel. That is why we can't see a traditional business season this year. The low margin condition lasts through the entire 2024 H1 so far. On the other side, according to latest schedules, the arrivals of iron ore would also peak in May. At the same time, iron ore inventories were at a seasonal high level. So oversupply is a basic tone of iron ore market in May. So in general, iron ore is slight bearish on fundamental perspective and also overvalued currently from my perspective.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that update, Hao.
And now let's talk about fuel oil with the people's broker, Archie Smith. Archie, thank you very much for joining us again. How are you doing today?
Yes, all good, all good. Glad to be back.
The Friend Month Brent crude futures actually fell. I think it was around like 6 to 7% on the week, last week, of course. Are we still looking at some sort of like depleting war premium? Are there other factors to play? Any geopolitics for your international relations geek like myself?
yeah, for sure. I mean, it's still very much a decrease in the war premium that I spoke about on the last episode 2 weeks ago. So to kind of follow on from that, I mentioned in that podcast that some analysts at Bloomberg had estimated like a rather extreme $25 war premium, whereas other analysts in the market are looking more at a kind of $5 to $10 war premium, which I think is slightly more realistic. And yeah, again, look, as ceasefire talks continue and escalation kind of subdues or steadies, if you will, there is certainly that factor of this war premium that had already been priced in by the market sliding. There are other factors indeed that have kind of come about this week that are really affecting the price as well. I mean, midweek last week, we had the US EIA data, which is the data that shows the oil and products inventories in the US. They had a massive kind of surprise build of like over 7 million barrels in the crude. I think estimations were well off. And that kind of snowballed, acted as a catalyst for the Brent crude. Well, it fell about 3% on the day and certainly snowballed into about 7% fall on the week. And that's been reinforced again last night by the API data that again showed a smaller build of crude, which is basically just kind of suggesting that there is kind of ample supply in the physical market, which, you know, again, is adding that downward pressure to the future. Yeah, so off the back of the API data that came out last night, I mean, the Brent's off 1% on the day already. And another thing I suppose to mention is the US dollar has been getting stronger kind of from the middle of last week. We've seen an uptick in the US dollar. When the US dollar gets stronger, holders of other currencies against the dollar have less buying power for crude because it all trades in dollars. We often see an inverse relationship there. When the US dollar strengthens, crude comes off because less people are buying it. Another point to mention that's definitely had a play yesterday or the day before when the news came out is Russian deputy head came out with a statement saying, look, we are prepared to adjust oil production if needs must. And he was actually talking from the opposite direction that OPEC have been going recently. And he was basically saying, if oil production needs to be increased, we can do it. And that's not to say they have done that yet or they will do that, but it, just the headline alone did really influence the market with that kind of feel of that flurry of more supply and again added that downward pressure. So, I mean, you know, the front Brent crude futures have gone from kind of highs of $90 or just over $90 last month, and now we're trading around the $82 barrel level. So, yeah, certainly seen some weakness in the market there.
Okay, we will see how the story unfolds and especially like the whole OPEC-Russia relationship continues. Yeah, so that's another very interesting aspect. So thank you very much, Archie, for joining us today.
Thank you, sir.
And I wish you a nice day. Now, on the 25th of April, FIS were down in Athens hosting a seminar on shipping risk management. From what we have learned, this seminar has been a success. But to tell us a little about it, we have FIS's consulting manager, Hugh Taylor, who organized it and gave a presentation on risk management. Yu, thank you very much for joining us today. Could you start by giving us maybe some background on why you held that conference, what it was about, and how it went?
My job is to help clients with topics such as shipping's admission into the EU ETS, the emissions trading system, and how to set up for and trade derivatives. More often than not, I find myself working with Greek clients, which is perhaps no surprise given they own about a quarter of the global fleet. In fact, in a list recently published by the EU, a list that assigns shipping companies to an EU country, there are over 750 companies assigned to Greece, which is roughly double the number of that of the second place country, which in fact only has so many companies assigned to it as many non-EU countries are actually registered to it because they just call there for their fuel. We wanted to head down there to teach some of these shipping companies about ways that we could help them manage some of their key risks, their costs of freight, fuel and carbon. So our CEO, John B., opened up with a section on forward freight agreements, as he often does. He talked about the makeup and size of the FFA market yesterday, today and tomorrow. It was great as ever to get John's perspective, as he's been involved with the FFA industry since the early days and even negotiated some of the first trades back in the late 80s. One striking statistic to come out of John's segment, which I heard many people repeating during the drinks afterwards, was that although Greece owns 25% of the global fleet, it is responsible for only about 2% of the freight derivatives market.
Oh, well, this is very significant, but do you have any idea why that is?
I think there are many reasons. I've spoken recently, in fact, with some of the biggest Greek ship owners, you know, some of the biggest shipping companies in the world, that do not trade derivatives, and that's seemingly, you know, as a principle. They prefer instead to use like traditional risk management methods such as diversifying their fleets or rotating into long-term time charter markets, you know, which are more stable, and index-linked transactions. These are indeed effective methods. To fully hedge, you know, one would have to use also FFA and fuel derivatives. In fact, almost all our medium-sized shipping clients outside of Greece use them extensively. One of the many reasons that Greek companies are opposed to them seems to be a long-running hangover from the financial crisis, in the fallout of which many companies lost a lot of money because they held OTC FFA positions with counterparties that went bust due to the crisis. FFA are no longer OTC. They're cleared on exchange. In fact, that change happened back then. Yet many Greeks remain marked by this time and, you know, refuse to accept the post-2009 structures, which have actually come a long way.
So going back to the conference, was it only about this sticking point?
Oh, no, not at all. That seemed to be, you know, a key topic that emerged. But actually, after John, we had an FFA trader who gave us a glimpse of, you know, what it looks like from a practical standpoint. He talked a lot about portfolio management. We then had a marine fuels expert discussing many of the new alternative fuels that have emerged recently and their financial viability under the EU ETS and Fuel EU Maritime. We then finally moved on to the EU ETS, and we had a talk on sort of key drivers within the EUA market. And we also had a representative from Greece's EU registry who offered practical advice and considerations when opening and operating an EUA account. Finally, I followed up with a brief insight into sort of risk management trading strategy across all three products. I also talked about how our consultancy helps clients get set up to trade.
Okay, so like it looked like it was a very interesting conference, and I guess that there were a lot of questions. So what kind of questions were asked by the attendees, and what are the next points on the agenda?
There were a few questions were asked in the actual event, but following the event, we put on a sort of drinks and canapes afterwards up in this nice bar on the 8th floor. And yeah, we were approached by loads of people. I'd say particularly the younger Greek generation, the traders, they wanted to learn more about a number of the topics from the day, but particularly I'd say hedging using options. The FFA options market has been growing really well in recent years, but options are still very underused by shipping players. particularly in comparison to other industries like aviation. In fact, in my speech, I gave an example of a structured trade in fuel oil, which is actually a combination of options. I also gave a real-life example of a simple year-long simple hedge that uses an outright call strip. Anyway, with regards to what's next, yeah, we're planning to get back down there to Athens to put on some classes on basic derivatives to answer some of this demand, which is great, really, because I really love Greek salads. Yeah, so I'll be taking an evening class in Greek and stocking up on the old sun cream.
That seems much needed in Greece. Okay, thank you very much, you, for joining us today.
Thanks, Davide. Thanks, everyone.
And that's it for this week. Make sure to subscribe by clicking the subscribe button on wherever you get your podcast. Also, make sure to follow us on LinkedIn or sign up to our app, FIS Live, to make sure you never miss any freight and commodity analysis from FIS. Thanks again for joining us, and see you in 2 weeks' time on FIS's Freight and Commodity podcast, Freight Up.